Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Boys Next Door Window Cleaning, Mark Greshner Photography, also Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, Riviera Ag Seeds in Radville, Paul Waldo over there at Royal LePage in Regina, Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn, and SAS Selects Football. Before we get to Nick Lewis and our pick six for SAS Selects Football, we'll check in with our first guest. And our first guest here on Growing the Game with Ballsy is University of Regina Rams head coach Mark McConkey. You guys are back on the field. What does that look like here in the COVID-19 world?
Yeah, again, it's changing daily. We're trying to figure out what exactly that does look like. We still are waiting for final approval from the university, but it's looking good. We're going to start around mid-September, September 16th to be exact, and go all the way to the end of August. So we're going three times a week, again, depending on the number. Again, that number changed yesterday, I believe. It went from 50 people allowed on the field or in the mini league now to 80. So that will change kind of the way we practice. But we were planning on doing kind of two group sessions, kind of like two teams, like a younger group, older group, or a mixture, or by position. We're still kind of working through all those details. And it's all a numbers game right now. So we're just trying to do the best we can and have the most efficient practices we can.
So what's the end game here? Like, how do you keep these guys engaged? I know there was some talk about maybe some exhibition games with the U of S. I know the U of S has talked about going out east and playing like in a mini tournament. What does it look like for the Rams?
Yeah, for this fall, I'm not sure what's going to be happening. Again, I know I've talked to Scott Flory quite a bit about this fall, and even with the, as of right now, the size of the league could be 50. So it'd be pretty much like we'd bring 20 players, they'd bring 20 players. You can't really have much of a game if that was the case. So we're looking to do some sort of spring jamboree, and whether that's UVS coming here. I know they're in talks going down east. I've had a few phone calls with some OUA schools about potentially coming here for a jamboree. So again, it's all in the infancy stage of the planning. So everyone's kind of excited about the idea of having a couple OUA teams come here. But I'm sure once we kind of get into the logistics, it's going to be harder to do than it is to say. So we'll see how that goes, but it's kind of fun having those conversations with those coaches and kind of starting that planning process for maybe a spring jamboree here in Regina.
What's your best selling point as a recruiter? Because I'm going to get into recruiting in a second. Mark McConkey's best attribute, is it your youth, the way you communicate? What is it?
Yeah, for myself personally, I would say it's my youth and just my ability to relate to the players. I think that's something that's very important. And some coaches, just again, you get older and that's just kind of how it works. And it's harder to relate to the players. And I was in these guys' shoes not too long ago. It's 7 years to be exactly in 2013. So I know what they're going through. And football's changed. University football has changed so much, even in the last 10 years, for the amount these guys are asked to do. It's slowly turning into kind of more of that NCAA model where they got the mandatory 6 a.m. workouts four times a week, five times a week. Then they got skill work in the afternoon and they got this. So we're slowly turning into that NCAA model. We're asking these guys to do more and more every year. And that's part of why there's so much turnover in youth sports every year, because I think when kids end up signing up, they don't realize how much of a time commitment it really is. But I would say that's my biggest selling point, is kind of that youthfulness and just kind of being a age-wise a younger coach.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's kind of what I thought. You guys have a great high school program right in your backyard here. Regina High School football would be right up there with a lot of programs in the country, especially per capita. You've got a great program in the Leboldus Golden Suns here in our backyard, and you snagged four recruits. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, we haven't actually met with them in person because you've got to know in-person recruiting, but we've had a lot of Zoom meetings with them and their families, and we've been in contact with them for the last couple of years, watching them in their season last year. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see them at Spring League this year, so they've been on our radar for quite a while. They're great kids, great players, great families. They kind of check all the boxes that we want our Rams players to have. So it was a no-brainer to offer these guys and get them all signed up and be on the field hopefully with us next year.
Can I put you on the spot? Can you give us some names here?
For sure, yeah. We just to start on offense, there's three defensive guys, one offensive guy. So offense, we got Ethan Marshall. He's a receiver. Again, he comes from a very athletic family. Mm-hmm. So he's the one offensive guy we have. Then on defense, we got the younger brother of Jacob Dukinovich. We've got Lucas. So he's a D lineman for Leboldus. Mm-hmm. Again, great player. He's going to be really good. Caden Brennan, he's a linebacker. And Joel Wolvestang is a DB. So, again, some pretty athletic players coming in to play for our crazy defensive coordinator, Sheldon Gray. I'm sure he's going to have those guys flying around everywhere on the field. And I'm excited to see these guys start come training with us and maybe practice with us in the winter if it works out.
Now, we've touched touched on this before. Now, I saw that the university's looking for, some sponsors to come forward and help, so the story goes, help honor the student-athlete scholarships. We know it's a tough time for everybody in this pandemic world. How are you guys holding up financially? I know you had said, 1 year would be good. Are you guys still okay scholarship-wise in terms of honoring things for the kids?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're good. And again, I've had some conversations with our president. We're going to be okay. It might even be for 2 years. I don't know exactly all the financials. I know we've got lots of investments and that the Rams have put away from years and years ago. And ideally, we don't want to touch those and get into those. But if we needed to, we can. So we're in a good spot. I'm not worried about that at all. And again, like we've got a university appeal right now where people can come and donate. We're going to be launching an online 50-50 in the next couple of weeks here where people can buy tickets and you get a chance to win, and all the money and proceeds goes to the Rams program and to the scholarship fund. So we got some fundraising opportunities for people to give back. And again, I'm excited about those to kind of come out here in the next couple of weeks.
How old are you? 30, 31? How old are you?
30.
30 years old. Young guy, young family. How do you deal with the stress of this situation? Like, you've got to have a positive attitude. You can't get down because then your players will get down. And it's a very frustrating time for these guys. You know, they say a young guy's brain doesn't fully develop till he's 24. So, and this isn't meant to be derogatory, but we have kids that they're kids. They're not mature yet. So they'll have their ups and they'll have their downs. They're probably excited to get onto the field, but it'll be a case of one step forward, two steps back sometimes. How do you stay anchored to be kind of the face of it? Because, and no disrespect, but like a guy like a Steve Bryce is older, or a Frank McChrystal has been through all the wars, a Bernie Schmidt. You're new to this game. How do you deal with it?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And to be completely honest, I just have a great support system around me. I got people that I can lean on when I need to. And you're right. I gotta be kind of the strong shoulders, strong face of the organization. And I'm looking forward to that. I think I'm doing a good job so far. Obviously, we've had this 5 month pandemic, 6 month pandemic. So things have been a little interesting, but I mean, I just got great support around me. Whenever I do get down, again, I try not to show the players that, but I just complain to my wife and then she kind of puts me back in line. We got a great coaching staff who have that experience. Guys like Sheldon Neal, Jeff Stusick, Dwayne Mason, and even Coach Gray, who's been coaching for, 12, 14 years now. Like, we got such a well-experienced staff that I can lean on those guys as well. And I've got no issue doing that. And then obviously, probably the number one guy I can lean on is my dad, who's coached high school football for 30 years, the junior level with the Colts. So I can always lean on those guys for advice, which is great.
Don't waste a crisis, they say. So what's one thing the Rams coaching staff has gotten better at? What's one thing you identified that, hey, we weren't doing this as good, we're doing it much better now?
Actually, that's another great question, Baldy. This is like a softball question. I'm glad you asked. In August, we met one-on-one with each coach, and we each kind of picked an area or two areas that we want to improve on ourselves as a coach. It's not so much X's and O's. It's more of how can I be a better coach for the Rams? And some guys, it involves making sure we're giving feedback to all the players. Some guys want to work on their game day, what they do on game day. So it's exciting. So it's kind of like a 12-month project we're working on with all the coaches. And again, I'm excited to kind of see the results as we move forward through this year into next year.
Okay, so give us one. What's one for Mark McConkie?
I got lots. I got many. Probably my biggest one, I think, is just kind of working on just my leadership, learning more about leadership and delegating and problem solving. I'm working with a leadership coach right now. I'm taking this very seriously. So that's probably my number one thing, because like you said, being the guy at the top, you got to make all the hard decisions. And when everything goes great, that's fine. But when things go bad, things fall on you. So I want to make sure I can limit those experiences and have a positive experience here with the Rams and the players and the organization.
Well, you got our support here at Growing the Game with Ballsy. Love it, Mark. Continued success and navigating your way through uncharted waters right now.
Exactly. Yeah, thanks, Ballsy.
Time now for the pick six for the Sasalex football program out there starting their 7-on-7 this weekend. They've got the junior varsity and varsity programs going on out there with Zelko Stefanovic and the gang in Owa. My next guest has worked with Zelko coaching the stars of tomorrow. Today that would be Hall of Famer Nick Lewis joining me here as the guest on pick six. How are you today, Slick Nick?
I'm doing great. And just to reiterate, Zelko is such a great and Deb, you can't leave Deb out.
No, they're two great people.
Great family that does so much for these young athletes.
Okay, so Steve Nash has been hired as the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, and Stephen A. Smith went on a bit of a rant saying, you know, he's a good guy, he's got great IQ in the game of basketball, he's a Hall of Famer, so it's not a cut down to Steve Nash, but this is a white privileged hire where guys like Tyronn Lue and maybe Mark Jackson should have had a chance ahead of Steve Nash. Do you think that's a white privileged hire, Nick Lewis?
No, I think it's a who you know hire. I mean, he worked with development with the Warriors, so he was around Kevin Durant for those years Kevin was there. And Sean Marks, the GM, and him were teammates with the Phoenix Suns. So when you look at it, he has so many connections there. If you're connected to the best player on that team and you have a great relationship with him, and you also have a great relationship with the general manager, I think it makes it a natural fit. I think where the privilege comes in is when you see some of these white coaches getting longer tenures with teams or longer to go out and compete than some of the black coaches. I mean, look at Alvin Gentry in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, they came a long way this year. Zion played he missed most of the season. They didn't play him a bunch of minutes in the bubble, but they were still competitive. Brandon Ingram, under Alvin Gentry, became the most improved player.
Yeah.
So you have all these positive things, but now he gets fired. And I don't think that would have happened if you look at Dallas, where Dallas was losing those years when Dirk's back in and, you know, only went in 20 games and then 24 games before Luka comes along. They went 27 last year. Rick Carlisle was never on the hot seat to get fired.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, on the other side of the things, too, you look at a guy like Doc Rivers, Mark Jackson, Derek Fisher. They're guys that have had opportunities without having head coaching experience. So, yeah, but I appreciate what you just said there. It's a very good point. Let me ask you, because I'll get into this in a minute, but you've helped model or mold my son, who's now down south. So I know you're coaching firsthand in the park. But how did you find your transition into the pros? Was it different than you thought it would be? Just your thoughts on your short stint there with the BC Lions.
No, it was everything I thought it would be. I mean, I loved working with young men, and to have a relationship with Brandon Rutley, been teammates for 3 years, and to go into that, now I'm his coach. So I already had his respect, right? Because he knew the type of person I was and what I kind of demand from the players as a fellow player and now as a coach. So him and John White clicked really they got really close at the beginning of training camp. And one of those things is this: those two guys, I allowed them to lead everyone. I just set the standard and helped them. And then they just went out and did what they're supposed to do, and that's be vets and be professionals. And it was really fun, man, to go out there on a daily basis, figure out what they need to get better at, and go out there and execute it. And as you've seen as the season went on, we progressed and progressed and progressed at our run game, and those guys got better.
Is it tough for a great player, a superstar player, to be a head coach? I look back and I see like Wayne Gretzky. He wasn't the best coach for Phoenix. I wouldn't say he was terrible. Magic Johnson wasn't a great coach with the Lakers. You know, the one guy that was a superstar coach was Larry Bird. Like, he did a pretty good job. He was a superstar player, and then he did a great job with the Indiana Pacers before going to be a president. Now, you're a superstar slot back receiver in the CFL, Hall of Famer, but you coach running backs. Like, is it harder for a guy to be a superstar player, you know, because you expect maybe guys to pick up the game as fast or as easy as you did?
No, not at all. And I think that, you know, it is harder for superstars to be coaches because one of the things is that they had a special way to do it, right? And most guys believe you have to do it one way. I'm very open-minded, and my career changed. As I got bigger, I changed my career. I changed my style. I had to change different things in my game. Mm-hmm. I've been training kids or young men since 2008. So, therefore, I'd already went through the process of understanding that my way doesn't work all the time. So, now I have to take what they can do and just make it better. Mm-hmm. And that's why I focus on balance and movement. And because I believe if you have the freedom of movement, you're always in position to make a play, then you will make your share of plays. Right. Yeah. I've seen coaches that struggle coming into it that were great as a player, then come into it and then struggle. Mm-hmm. Right. But for me, it was just, I'm going to teach these guys the game. If I can get you to the line of scrimmage, you do the rest. And once I taught those guys the defensive fronts and how the defense works as a whole, and they didn't have to guess every play, they got better. And, you know, one of the best things for me is Brandon Rutley and Don White Bode have put out on social media that I was the best running back coach they've ever had. Right?
Yeah, that's good.
And
that's
I think that's just a true testament of I focus on educating them on the game, but I allowed them to be them. I didn't say, hey, this is how you have to do it. No, this is – you got to get the job done. My job is to make it as easy as possible for you to get your job done.
Hey, at number two in Ballsy's pick six, the golf and divorce have jumped big time during the pandemic. People are getting divorced and more people are golfing. Anything Nick Lewis has done more of during the pandemic?
I golfed more, but I also worked more. And no, I think that was the best part is I worked a lot during the pandemic and got some exciting stuff coming soon. And that's just one of the things, man, is being able to just set your feet and actually grind and get things done without the expectation of going back and forth from Texas or going on vacation. It allowed me to just really hone in on what I was doing and, yeah, just try to go out and work on my golf game to get out of the house because when I'm in the house, I just work.
Yeah. So number three on Ballsy's pick six, a lot of talk has been made. Should we play college football? And more specifically, as it relates to the United States, because it's a big money thing down there. And I know firsthand my son's down there at UND in the lower rung of NCAA football. But, you know, it's like, okay, should we have online courses and send these guys home, or should we actually play football? I'm of the opinion, Nick, we should play football because you're going to be tested more, you're going to be in more of a structure, you'll be around medical personnel, as opposed to sending them home all willy-nilly and free-spirited. How do you feel about it?
I think it's got to be a mixture of both. I think you have to have all the athletes on campus. Right. I don't think they should be able to live off campus. Everybody's got to live on campus, and that's your bubble. Right. Athletes shouldn't be able to leave campus. They should have some assistance where people can go get groceries, they can give them lists and things like that. But if you keep the athletes on campus in a bubble, and then you test everybody going in and out, right? Mm-hmm. And now the athletes can now go play. And I believe you put it at the fans, hey, we're only going to allow this many fans in, but come at your own risk. We're not selling out anywhere close, like the first 10 rows down, because we don't even want the fans to get even close to the players, right? We're mm-hmm. going to test the referees. We're going to test, you know, the people that's coming from the outside in to film the games and things like that. They'll be thoroughly tested. But now you have your own bubble, right? Everybody that goes to that school will now go to that school online, which now you can take online classes in your dorm room.
Right.
But now you're playing football, and I think that's the best way to do it. You know, and that's just me personally.
So how do you feel, number four in Ballsy's pick six, how do you feel about what Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins says? He said, if I die, I die. I'm kind of at peace about it. They asked him to rate between 1 and 10 his level of concern. 1 being the person who says masks are stupid and 10 being the guy saying, I'm not leaving my master bathroom for the next 10 years. Well, he went on to say, I'm not going to call anybody stupid, but I would put myself at 0.000000. How do you feel about what Kirk Cousins said? Because he took a lot of heat for that conversation.
Yeah, I think it's irresponsible. I mean, one of the things is that certain people live with different – there's people that walk around that sanitize everything before COVID, right?
Right.
We didn't condemn them then. Let's not do it now. Like, if some people are more at risk that we know people – some people are more at risk, let's be sensitive to what they go through.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't feel like you're at risk, then that's fine. But let's not, you know, I'm 0.00001 because I really don't care about anybody else. Right? That just shows it's an insensitive statement. I think that, you know what, I'm not as worried about it as some others, but for the people that are, I hope that you're doing well.
Yeah.
Right? I hope that you're taking the proper procedures to have the best outcome possible. And I think that's the way you handle it. It's not really just a, if I die, I die, because that's insensitive to all the 180,000 plus in the U.S. that's died and the, you know, 200,000-300,000 in the world that's died.
Yeah, no, that makes good sense, Nick Lewis. Okay, Ryan Reeves of the Golden Knights is drawing attention for his chirping in the series versus the Vancouver Canucks. How do you feel about trash talking? And I'm assuming you were a pretty good trash talker back in your day.
Yeah, I don't mind trash talking. You know, there's two different trash talkers. There's the guys like Simone Lawrence that yell a lot, and they talk and they yell, but it's not really trash talk. Like, it's just, I think they use it as motivation and they're yelling it. I find trash talk to be, you know, you got to be educated on and cerebral about how you dismantle the person across from you.
Right.
It's not just about yelling in their face and getting up and showboating. It's just the words, the precise words that affect their game. And when you're doing that at a high level, you know, trash talk can be a guy catching a ball or a defensive end getting a sack, picking the quarterback up and saying, I'm going to be here all day. Right? You know, looking at the tackle in front of you and smiling and just saying things that slowly deteriorate that person through the course of a game that makes them feel mentally that they're getting beat every play, and physically they know they can't stand up to it.
Yeah. Hey, Nick, who matched you word for word? Like, who was the best trash talker you played against, either in practice or in games? Because you are a cerebral dude. You could tell listening to this interview, and I know you're pretty good with your mouth, but who matched you, you know, who was a good trash talker?
You know, there wasn't, like, Corey Banks was a good trash talker, but there wasn't many, because most of those guys, their version of trash talk is being yelling or mm-hmm. or just saying something that anybody would say,
yeah.
Right? It wasn't really, like, something they took some time and effort into really doing it. And, like, young guys, I would tell them all the time. They would say something, and I would just say, hey, you know, talk to my secretary until you make some plays or you get some clout. And then I'll come back and talk to you. Right?
Yeah.
At that point, it's like, I'm not talking to you. Like, you're a special teamer, or you're out here for one or two plays a game, and you don't deserve for me to respond to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Because for me, like, trash talk is supposed to be able to, like I said, be cerebral, be able to affect that person mentally. And you can't just go out there and yell and just say, hey, you're this or you're that or, oh, you suck, or I thought you were bad. Like, that's not trash talk.
Yeah. It's a waste of words.
Anybody can say that.
It's a waste of words, waste of breath. Don't waste your energy. This is a number six in Ballsy's pick six, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's the one I'm looking forward to the most talking about here. How would Nick Lewis fix the CFL?
I think you don't need six owners, and I think you need to shorten the ownership group, and I think there's just got to be a way that you can bring the players and the owners together for the greater good of the game.
So what, I mean, one owner? So what, one owner, two owners?
I think you need one owner, possibly two. But you need one person to run the West and one person to run the East. Give them the staffs on every team that's going to have staffs now. But I just think it's got to be in a situation where you have to – there's too much money going out to people.
Mm-hmm.
Basically,
yeah.
Everybody wants money, and until there's money to go around, you can't. Right? Everybody's staff is bigger than it was 20 years ago, and at the same time, if you look at the players, the game is at an all-time high. More people watch the CFL now than ever before. And the TV money is bigger than it's ever been. But now the players really aren't getting paid more. I mean, the quarterbacks are, but nobody's getting $6 million like Rocket Ismail.
Yeah, so
right. So where is this going? Mm-hmm. You know, they're cutting coaches' salaries and they're cutting coaches' numbers. So to me, the model of the business doesn't fit. So you have to take some of those people getting paid out to allow it to grow properly.
Okay, so let me stop you here because we're on different ends of this, but I respect your opinion. I want to go back and forth with you on this. Okay,
let's do it.
Like the sixth offensive lineman in the CFL, I've talked to a couple of coaches, and these coaches told me the sixth Canadian offensive lineman has us by the balls right now because we need him, supply and demand. So in a lot of cases, that sixth offensive lineman is making more money than a starting linebacker in your, you know, contributing linebacker on every down. Yeah, right, yep. right. And you okay, so I get that. But here, I'm trying to grow the game, Nick, in Canada, and I'm trying to look at our wages. Do you think if we added more Canadians, i.e. Canadian starters, if we could develop more Canadians, even a guy like you in Canada and Regina developing guys, if we could get more Canadians on the roster, Canadians will play for Canadian money. To me, it would drop our wages eventually because and Nick, it would give guys here the dream of running out onto the field and being a professional football player, which would make them be more interested in the game. Just hear me out for a second. Because when I interview high school kids, they don't tell me I want to be Brandon Banks or I want to be Solomon Elamimian or I want to be Nick Lewis. They talk about Luke Kuechly. They talk about Randy Moss. They talk whatever. They talk about the American guys, the NFL guys, the guys they're exposed to, okay? I think in a lot of cases the dream is dying for Canadian kids here, so they don't really pay attention to it. What do you think about adding more Canadians to the roster? I think I know where you're going with this, but I'm going to let you have the floor here.
Well, I've said it before. I think you need to you can keep the same Canadians to the roster, but you need to cut the Canadian starters, right? The only reason a 6-0 lineman is getting paid so much money is because it's a Canadian and supply and demand. Yeah. If there was enough Canadian O linemen to go around, then the 6-0 linemen wouldn't be getting paid that much.
Okay, but let me go here. Is there not an American coaching bias in the Canadian Football League? Hear me out. Let's use Brett Jones. I use Brett Jones as the poster child. Brett Jones is a Canadian offensive lineman, comes from the Regina Rams program. If coaches are not forced to put certain amount of Canadian starters on the roster, they don't even look at Brett Jones. They go to the kid from Baylor. They go to the kid from
I wouldn't say that.
No, you wouldn't?
Last year in BC, we only had to start 7 Canadians, and at least 7 or 8 of our games, we started 9.
But did you do that?
I think that's a false statement. And we didn't have Canadian coaches. All of our coaches were American except for Marcus Howell and Taylor Attilio.
Okay, but did you do that? Did you do that because maybe your scouting wasn't good enough to bring in better Americans? Like, were the Canadians just...
Well, that's not my job. Our job is to put the best people on the field within the structure of the ratio.
So you don't believe, and I'm not saying you're biased, okay? Don't take that the wrong way. But you don't believe there is an American coaching bias against Canadians in the CFL?
No, I just think Canadians don't. And see, here's the thing. You have to get to a point to one, you have to compete. Professional yep. football and professional sports should not be because of where you're born.
So how do we make this better, Nick, then? I know you're trying and you're doing a good job.
Well, that's where I'm going.
Okay.
So two, what we need to do is implement more training and more competition. You get a guy like Anthony Parker, who's one of the greatest athletes I've ever seen in my life, that couldn't start in the CFL for 6 years because he didn't have enough competition at the UFC to go against, and now when he goes up against American DBs, he can't beat them. Because
right.
he didn't ever develop the tools to have to beat people better than him because he was always faster. He could always jump higher. He could always do those things. So how do you get that? You have to raise the level of competition. You have to take Americans or Canadians into the U.S., and you have to raise their level of competition
to learn how to beat people that are better than them. And then at the end of the day, you get better every time.
Okay.
But now when it comes time to the game, then that's what's going to happen, right? So when we look at the whole scheme of things, Canadians, we shouldn't just give them jobs. Just because, in the, like I've said before, the CFL, the Canadian Football League, is not, it's not Canadian Football League because of the players. It's because of the game. If we took this same game to the U.S. and played it, let's say I went to the U.S. and started the league, and we played with all the Canadian Football League rules, would that still be the Canadian football? Yes.
Right, it is. I'm not going to disagree.
It's the game. There. It's the game that's special, right? And you should want the best players, right? You should always want the best players on the field. And my thing is this. If you said there's only four spots for starters for Canadians, I don't believe that there'll be four on every team. I believe there'll be five and six on some teams or even more. But now you're not handcuffed by that sixth O lineman anymore because now you can go out and bring in another American, right? We know that there's certain designated Canadian spots, defensive tackle, safety, wide receiver, one wide receiver, and then you're going to put three or four O linemen out there,
mm-hmm.
right? So now if I have three or four Canadian O linemen and I can only just two other O linemen or one other O lineman, I have to have a Canadian because if my one of my Canadians go down, I have to put him in. So therefore, his value goes up because I have to do that. But now if I had a game where I only had two Canadian O-linemen and Canadians elsewhere and the Canadian goes down, now I can put in the best player, right?
Yeah.
So where do we get to where we say, look, let's just go work for it. It should be a goal. I worked my ass off for so many years. I was a Division II walk-on. I was the last person signed on the Calgary Stampede roster. I didn't get a job in Canada because I went to Texas. I didn't get a job in Canada because I went to Ohio State. I didn't get a job in Canada because anything else. I earned my job. And the best part about me looking back is every year I earned my job. And if you can't look in the mirror and see that you earned your job, I mean, what good are you?
Are we going to have the NFL's expanded their practice roster, which will probably limit the Nick Lewis's of the world coming here. We'll get the next tier of Americans coming here, which will still be good football players, but will they want to come here for less money? Because I can't see how we're not going to have a serious hit to this salary cap coming back if we're losing this much money year over year. So are we going to have kids that still want to come to Canada from the United States with the conversion rate and everything and still play football here?
Well, that's what I'm working on now. I'm working on some things to work with the PA and try to help generate some extra income and things like that. So I think that it's going to be a crucial time and direction on what happens from here. But I want to go back and touch on what you were asking earlier also to finish up my point with Canadian kids always looking to be Randy Moss and T.O. and all those things. Well, the Canadian Football League doesn't promote its players.
Bingo.
When have you seen Bo Levi Mitchell or Mike Riley outside of a game?
Said it a million times.
Yep. Before they come on a, you put them on an ad that Calgary's playing BC.
Yeah.
There's never a time where you're really promoting these players. The NFL is about the stars. The NBA is about the stars. Everybody isn't a star. There's 1,700 players in the NFL, but only about 200 you actually know or actually can play long enough that they can retire after they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Those are 1,500. They're going to play 2.5 to 5-7 years, and they're not going to make enough money to retire off of. And then they're back in the same work world as everybody else. Yeah. So this whole dream is a facade.
So
right? You see the top players, so then you think everybody gets that, and everybody doesn't get it. If you're only going there for the fame, just because you get there doesn't mean you're famous. I have hundreds of NFL friends that you would never know.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? And I agree with you 100%, but that's what I mean. It is a facade, but it's a facade they think they can reach because it's promoted that way. The CFL needs to be do a better job of promoting, like you said, but they also have to. There also has to be a dream for that Canadian kid to chase. So I want to bring this up. You help athletes out locally. I can speak from personal experience. You did a lot to help my son get to where he is. Now, What are you seeing in Canadian athletes? Is it reality or is it a facade? Do you see talented kids here in the community? Because not everybody can go to the United States like you mentioned. Maybe, you know, financially or whatever, they can't. So how can we do it to build our football up even here north of the border so we have better competition for the Anthony Parkers and those kind of guys of the world?
I think I've seen a huge shift in Canadians and young people playing football. That, you know, football used to be an extra thing, right? You play hockey, you play football. But now I see a shift of guys going away from hockey and getting into football. Right now I'm training a group of kids that come in every weekend from Estevan and Weyburn.
Right.
Right? So it's something that you can see it. And you can see these kids that just over the course of a month and a half, how much better they've gotten. Mm-hmm. And Zelko does such a great job of taking these kids down there to play in this tournament in San Antonio. And I've been in talks with Garrett Jones about trying to expand this into Houston as well. And then being able to create experiences where they come up here. Because at the end of the day, all you want to do is see who the best is. And that's how I built my career. I walked into college, visited Walker. I said, okay, who's the best receiver here? That's who I got to be better than. When I walked into Calgary and I said, who's the best receiver here? That's who I got to be better than. Mm-hmm. That mentality took me to where I'm at now, right? So when you're a Canadian kid and you can walk there and you step on the field and say, oh, man, some of these kids are really talented. That's who I got to be better than, right?
Right.
That's where the mindset has to be. And it has to be to purely go and compete. It's not about winning and losing. It's about going out and competing to the fullest. Because you know if you competed to the fullest, one, you got better. Because you had to raise your level of play regardless of anything else. You raise your level of play. And if you keep doing that enough and you keep stepping up enough, you're going to get there. Like we talk about Ethan. I think Ethan is top 10 Canadian talents I've ever seen as far as athletic ability. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got to put it all together on the field. He's got to do these things. But at the end of the day, what's going to come down to it is how will he now compete every day at practice with people that are right now are better than him?
Right.
He might be more talented than some of those guys, but those guys have more football experience because they play more games and they do all these other things. And they've been competing against some better players. But now, every day that he goes out there and competes, in a year or two, you're going to look and say, man, this growth that you see, because the only way that you look at professional sports, there's not a big gap in how much more talented somebody is. It comes down to the little things. I can't drift on a route. I can't do this. I got to be able to get in and out of it cleanly, right?
Yeah.
I can't take this false step here from of safety because now this guy's too fast and I'm going to lose my angle.
Right.
Right. All those little things helps you to become a better player. So let's not give people jobs because of nationality. Let's be more focused on how can we implement more to help them grow, find the competition to allow them to be the best they can be. At the end of the day, I can look in the mirror and say, I was the best Nick Lewis I could be.
Yeah, interesting.
And I can live with that.
Very interesting.
I don't look in the mirror and say, well, I played professional football and that was my goal.
Yeah.
No, I wanted to be the best I could be. I wanted to challenge myself. How good can you be? How great can you be?
Yeah, no.
That's a good mindset.
That's a good point. Okay, lastly, Nick Lewis, we call this the extra point. The Kansas City Chiefs got their Super Bowl rings during a socially distanced ceremony at Arrowhead Stadium yesterday, and Patrick Mahomes put a ring on his longtime girlfriend's finger, too, on the same day. Would you propose on the same day you got a championship Calgary Stampeders Grey Cup ring?
No. But my first proposal was right after we won the Grey Cup in 08, like 2 weeks after.
Really?
Yeah. It didn't work, but
Definitely was.
Well, here's my thing. So I liken it to this, Nick. So you and I saw his girlfriend's ring. It's a nice rock, okay? But that would be like you buy your girlfriend a Corvette or a Chevy Camaro, and she loves it. And she brings it home, and she pulls it in the garage, but you've got a Lamborghini. Like, the championship ring is pimped out, and even though her ring is nice, it like, you got to space it out, man. You got to be smart.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking back, Ballsy. In 08, I got engaged because I'm not, I guess because I wanted to, but
yeah.
It was after the Grey Cup. But then in 2014, I got married after the Grey Cup.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. So
like right
I
after?
Guess, I guess. So it was December 31st, so New Year's Eve. But, you know, if I'd have won more Grey Cups, I guess I'd have had more wives.
And maybe less money. Hey, are you a romantic dude? Like, what's the most romantic thing you've ever done?
Spent too much money on that first engagement.
That's also maybe the dumbest thing you've ever done. Hey, Nick, thanks for this. I appreciate it, buddy.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.